confidence for you, you jackwagon!
Coming to you live from his padded cell high atop Bethel Church, the most heralded, the most despised talk show in all of human history. This is the talk show Hell Hates. This is Pastor Mike Online.
And here we are coming to you live from our top secret broadcasting bunker here at Area 52. This is the talk show that Joe Biden hates in hell. And Kamala Harris. And the more you listen, the more you know why. Good to be with you today. We have a hurricane, another one. Actually, this one is headed our way. And now we don't live, we didn't move Festus next to the ocean or anything like that, but sometimes they come up through Texas or Louisiana. And they kind of go right up through central Arkansas, western Arkansas, and then swoop around the St. Louis area. And that's what is coming our way. And those of you who deal with any kind of like arthritis pain or anything like that, it's not a rumor. It's not like anecdotal medicine or anything like that. It's real. You feel weather coming. And I actually had my doctor told me that. I told him I'd been in a lot of pain. He said, why? I said, well, I don't really know why. He said, well, there has to be a reason. He said, what do you think? It was weather related? And I went, yeah, well, actually I do. And he did too. He believed in that. So we have one coming, and I had to lay down for a little while this morning, but it's good to be with you today. I want to start off. I got off the phone with a lady, and she very, very troubled, very troubled. She told me a lot of things that had happened in her life, and just some very, very troubling things. I asked her if I could give her name out, and she said, yeah. The name she gave me was Lisa Russo. And I made a promise to her that I would mention her today in prayer and mention her name for God's people to pray. And so write this down if you keep a prayer request list. In fact, while I'm thinking about it, I'm going to send this as a text message to one of the girls here that helps with our prayer request stuff. And put Lisa Russo on our prayer list. And voila, it is done. So anyway, I'm not going to give you all the details of everything that she mentioned to me, but just a very troubled life, a whole life full of trouble. And that happens to some people. So we're going to remember to pray for her today. Also, I am blessed. The things that I heard Sunday and yesterday concerning the happenings in Kenya. I mentioned here a while back, excuse me, I just had to wolf down my lunch real quick. I mentioned a while back that we'd found this lady who was nearly dead in her home from starvation. And we fed her, put her in the hospital. She got better. And actually, I found out that the day before she passed away, somebody who works in the office of our radio station, God bless you. And I told Michael, my son-in-law, to give everybody there my sincere appreciation. But somebody was going out to her almost every day to check on her. That's what Christians do. They love people and they care about them. And so anyway, the day before that, Sister Malheur, is how her name is pronounced. I finally figured it out. The day before she passed away, she was all smiles, talking, seemed like everything was fine. And she gave no signs whatsoever that she was sick, hurting, or that anything was wrong. And a couple things I take away from that. Number one, thank you for going to visit her. And it just shows the care, the love that people have. But the second thing was, I think God just took her. Like he did Moses. Moses just died. I mean, God just took his soul out of his body and Moses died. Now, there wasn't a thing wrong with Moses. For a 120-year-old man, there wasn't a thing wrong with him. Okay? And he was doing fine. I don't know why my phone's ringing. But anyway, he was doing fine. And all of a sudden, God just took him. And that's the way Sister Malheur was the day before she passed away. Everything was fine. She was laughing, enjoying a good day. They had made her some porridge, and she ate it, and everything was fine, and she passed away. And I mentioned that someone had made her casket, donated the casket for her, which was not a cheap casket. I mean, I saw it, and I've seen paupers' caskets before, and there is a big difference in them. But someone, whoever did that, you have my appreciation as well. Then I found out that she was embalmed because I knew that she had been buried pretty much the same day. And I thought, well, it's because she's not embalmed and, you know, we need to get her in taken care of. And no, that wasn't it at all. Someone embalmed her, local undertaker there in Lodwar, Turkana. Someone embalmed her. So now I'm starting to grasp this. The guys who drive our motorcycles, they dug her grave. Now, all of this in one of the poorest areas of the world, and no one's got their hand out wanting money for this. The guys who dug her grave, the man who donated the casket, the man who embalmed her, no one's demanding money. Now, I know a lot of politicians in Kenya who, even if your house gets robbed, you practically have to bribe the police to get them to look into it. So, that I mean, there's always somebody with their hand out demanding money, a bribe, a payoff, a kickback of some kind. And it just stood out to me that it is very clear to me that the message of the gospel and the two laws that our Savior gave to us, the two commandments, and his commandments are not grievous, the Bible says. We are never sorry that we kept God's commandments. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. Love your neighbor as yourself. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Those are the two commandments that we are under right now. And the gospel, I believe, from number one, the local pastors there in Turkana, but also through Ekayokan Radio, is having an effect on people's lives. I also found out that there are people now who are gathering up food independently and taking it out to individuals out in the outlying villages who they know have no food. They're doing this all on their own. We're not organizing that. That's just happening. And, you know, the Bible tells us that our labor in the Lord is never in vain. And I had mentioned before to the people of Kenya, look, take care of your own people. Take care of your neighbors. Watch out for them. Even in this country, if I had somebody who was my enemy, but I saw them hurting, bleeding, dying, I would help them. That's what we're called to do. And so I just wanted to thank God publicly for the manifestation of His grace, His love, His mercy, for loving me, covering my sins, my transgressions, putting it in my heart to love other people, love somebody besides myself, which that used to be me. And I'm stunned. I'm floored by the things that I'm hearing coming out of the areas where our radio station is ministering, both in Samburu and Turkana. What I'm hearing is some of the pastors, I'm not going to say, but it encourages me to see that kind of love, that kind of care, that kind of love that Jesus has for us, then us and God's people manifest that love to people that they don't know or whatever. There are two more ladies now that we are aware of who were very near death. The one we found by the side of the road, almost dead, she's still alive. She spent a week in the hospital, and they rehydrated her and fixed her all up. And she's still doing well, and somebody has undertaken the responsibility of taking her food. And then in this last feeding, I think, 676 families, I think, we found another elderly lady that was just too sick, literally, to almost come to the door to receive the food because she hadn't had food in so long. And so again, somebody has undertaken, just on their own, the responsibility of making sure that person has food. And again, this all goes back to the day that the Lord opened my eyes to, or just put it in my mind to help feed people. And I didn't understand the need was so great there in Turkana. But what a blessing that all has been. And so are we going to continue doing it? Yeah, absolutely we are. We'll do it until there's just no more to give. But I believe that God, if God's in it, He provides it. So far, He's provided the corn that we've needed, the beans. He's provided the resources for that. God is a providing God. And God taught me, and I'm very thankful for this, years ago, the lesson about having to beg everybody or demand money from people. Like the DVDs and the books that we sell we used to sell them years ago. God laid that on my heart. Mike, stop doing that. I didn't charge you. You didn't buy anything from me, did you? No. okay, then if I gave it to you freely, then you give it to others freely. Yeah, but God, what about this bill? And what about, we have to take care of this? And God said, I'll take care of it. You just trust me. Just trust me once. Will you do that? Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. And I like that phrase because there's some things that if you were to say, have you ever eaten this? I would say, not in your life. Well, you have to taste it and see. Like the time in Buffalo, New York, where I was offered tripe, beef tripe. It was at an Italian restaurant. The owner of the restaurant was a Christian, and he was part of the meeting that they had set up for me. I was going to be speaking for these guys, and one of the guys at the table ordered tripe, and he said, have you ever had it? And I said, no. He said, I'll give you one of mine, and you can try it. And I said, okay, I'll try it. I'll try anything one time. Well, I will never try tripe twice. I know that. That I'll never do that again, ever. Okay? So, taste and see that tripe is it's not for everybody. Anyway, I got to move on. Several articles that have come out, and I've got a subject I'm going to visit again because I think it's relevant. Let me read, I might put this on the screen here for you. Let's see if I can do that. Push that button so we don't get all that. Here we go. California's all-out war. Again, I am not a John MacArthur fan. I would tell you to stay away from him. Watch out. Number one, watch out for his Bible. Number two, watch out for some of his doctrine. I just don't go for that stuff. Saying that the blood is not necessary for salvation, that's a lie. But I appreciate the stand that he took in California. The all-out war on church worship intensifies with bans, fines, sending in spies. Can you believe that? California Governor Gavin Newsom and county leaders are escalating the state's war on church worship services, dragging pastors into court and demanding thousands of dollars in fines for illegally singing. Illegally singing and holding indoor worship services. This standoff is getting closer to a religious hot war with some of the same tactics being used, such as the use of agents sent behind enemy lines to spy on worship services. Well, you never have to spy on our, just watch, okay? The state is armed with Newsom's no worship order and subpoenas. One county even nailed a complaint letter on a church front door. Even Martin Luther would see the folly of that move. In California, during the Wuhan coronavirus, you can shop, eat out, riot, loot, and protest. But there are tough constraints on church worship. Churches can feed the hungry, but parishioners can't take communion. Churches can house the homeless, but can't sit 6 feet apart in the same pew with a neighbor. Let's see here. People can be housed overnight, but cannot hold a short worship service, Bible study, or meet for prayer. People can receive counseling to find work, but cannot be counseled on finding eternal life. The same governor who encourages mass protests bans all worship and is now fining churches for their right to assemble and worship. The same governor who says the church can meet for secular services bans the church from having religious worship. This unconstitutional hostility against religious worship must end, but it won't. Newsom has issued a rule against singing and chanting, even in worship in private homes, and he outlawed church worship. Church pastors say enough is enough. The pastor of Godspeak Calvary Chapel in Ventura County, Rob McCoy, was in court on Friday and fined $3,000 for holding 3 socially distanced worship services each Sunday on August 9th and 16th. McCoy and John and Jane Doe's from 1 to 1,000, his parishioners, were ordered by a judge earlier this month to cease holding worship services. They defied his orders. Good for you. Give them a hand. Communist dictators. Communist dictators. I mean, I understand it's California and all, But California is still supposed to be part of the United States of America. And I'm going to show you something that's going to maybe make sense in a little bit. Why is this happening? Or you might say, why is God letting this happen? Well, I have an answer for that. I'm glad you asked that question. I have an answer for that. In fact, let me pull that up now while I'm thinking about it. Go to Matthew 13. Let's see here. Another parable put he forth unto them, saying, the kingdom of heaven is likened unto a man which sowed good seed in his field. But while men slept, his enemy came and sowed tares among the wheat and went his way. But when the blade was sprung on. Now you can take that verse and you can apply that in an almost limitless fashion to multiple things. I mean, we know the devil. We know what he is. We know he's the enemy. The tares represent something that looks like wheat but isn't wheat. The idea of wolves dressed like sheep. The idea of people inside churches, like this article mentioned, where they're there, but they're not there as worshipers. They're there as spies. Is that even possible? I mean, that sounds like conspiracy theory stuff, right? They send in spies to our church. Well, that's true. And even Paul, even the Apostle Paul, said they came in and spied out our liberty. They came in to sit in our churches to see what it was we were preaching, to hear the liberty that we were extending to people through Jesus Christ, that they didn't have to be circumcised. In fact, physical circumcision availeth nothing, doesn't do any good whatsoever. So they came in, they would spy on Paul's church. While he was in there preaching, they would come in and spy out the liberty. And then they would go tell everybody, do you hear what that Apostle Paul is saying? Do you hear what he's doing? So do you think that they send in spies? Oh, I guarantee you they do. You think they, now that the churches are streaming, do you think now, I mean, just stop and think, just think Bible for a minute. Now that you've got a majority of the churches in this country streaming their services, recording them, is it now easy for let's say, I won't say the government, because I don't believe all the government's in on it, but a faction of our government, do you think it's easy now to see and hear what's going on and what's being said by churches now? That's a dun-dun-dun. That's what that is. But anyway, you can apply this verse anywhere. Sowing the tares in among the wheat. Like, here's you trying to raise your children the principles of the book of Proverbs, the Ten Commandments, the teachings of Jesus, trying to raise them the right way. That's good seed. You're trying to sow into them good things in their life. And then here comes the devil with Disney Channel. Right? Where they've got like trannies now on there. And I'm not talking about transmissions. Tranny. Think about these child actors like on Nickelodeon and Disney. Britney Spears and who else? Miley Cyrus. How they went from playing these innocent child things to being some of the most fornication related witchcraft whoredoms that anybody could possibly imagine. Okay? All beamed in to our children's minds via the television. And now kids aren't watching TV anymore. What are they doing? Holding their tablets all day long. watching those things nonstop. It's a nonstop barrage of stuff going into their mind. And remember, all these little kids shows, they're never going to come out and say, worship Satan. Well, they might. But it's going to be subtle. You may not catch it. You may not catch it until, like these guys did, until it's too late. But it's been sowed in there. Now, let me also, I always like to throw this in while I'm saying this. We live in a world that's full of sin. Don't think that just because you don't let your kids watch TV or have a tablet, that then they won't pick up any sinful habits. They're going to. Fact of it is, they're going to. Amish community, do you think those people live righteous and holy, clean lives? No, absolutely not. They got a sinful, wicked nature just like anybody else does. And I guarantee you, not having lived an Amish Mennonite lifestyle myself, but I guarantee you that sin always finds a way. Always does. Okay? So, but anyway, that's the enemy coming in, sowing tares everywhere. What do you think Antifa is? What do you think Black Lives Matter is? What do you think about all these leftist organizations? Things that they look like they're Americans and they believe in American values, but they don't. Joe Biden trying to convince everybody that he's for the police department. No, he's not. No, he's not. The New York Times running an article here a month ago saying the Democrat Party has arisen to become the law and order party. Are you kidding me? There's no way in the world the Democrat Party is the law and order party. Not a chance on your life. People who do that should be arrested. I agree. So anyway, but back to this. While men slept, his enemy came, sowed tares among the wheat and went his way. But when the blade was sprung up and brought forth fruit, then appeared the tares also. So the servants of the householder came and said unto him, Sir, didst thou not sow good seed in thy field? From whence then hath it tares? He said unto them, An enemy hath done this. The servant said unto him, Wilt thou then that we go and gather them up? But he said, Nay, lest while ye gather up the tares, you root up also the wheat. With them let both grow together until the harvest. This is why God is allowing this stuff to happen. And God's going to let it continue. And it's going to get worse. So that sin becomes totally manifest for what it really is. I mean, ask the question, why did God allow all these false Bibles, starting with, you had the Revised Standard Version for years. That didn't really take too much effect. The NIV coming on around 1973, the New King James in 1980, and then it's just one after another, after another, after another. Why is God allowing this? Well, when they first came out, and people started saying, I don't like those new Bibles. Oh, there's not a big difference between them. They're just making it to where you can understand the English a little bit better. But as time went on, you can then clearly tell the difference. Not necessarily, you can tell the difference in the Bibles, but you can tell that these churches that use these other Bibles, they manifest a different fruit than the King James churches. They manifest different doctrines, different lifestyles, different beliefs. All of these things, whatever was sown, that's what is going to be reaped. And so God has to let these things become ripe. He has to let sin be manifested for what it is. The evil of this world has got to rear its ugly head. The lion has to come out of his den, in other words. All sorts of metaphors like that. That's why it has to happen that way. And it's going to get worse. Let's see here. In Santa Clara, county officers sent in agents to spy on North Valley Baptist Church. According to documents the county gave to the court, that church has been fined $10,000 for illegally singing in two worship services. Santa Clara County taped a four-page letter to the front door of the church announcing that the county was displeased with the singing. Well, they ought to come hear us then. They keep moving the COVID-19 goalposts. Will the next step be masks to protect from the flu and the common cold? That you can just, people, if you think we're going to be done after the COVID thing is over with wearing masks and the shutdowns and the lockdowns, and the, if you think that that's all going to go away after a while. In the letter, Santa Clara County accused the socially distanced parishioners of singing. North Valley Baptist is failing to prevent those attending, performing, and speaking at North Valley Baptist services from singing. This activity is unlawful. This is like Twilight Zone things. You wake up one day and all of a sudden you're in a world where it's illegal to sing in church. I mean, it's like bizarro days. The county understands that singing is an intimate, meaningful component of religious worship. However, public health experts have also determined that singing together in close proximity and without face coverings transmits virus particles further in the air than breathing or speaking quietly. The county demands that North Valley Baptist immediately cease the activities listed above and fully comply with the risk reduction order, the gatherings directive, the state July 13 order and state guidance. Failure to do so. Let's see. That's interesting. Risk reduction order, gatherings directive, state July 13 order, and state guidance. Failure to do so will result in enforcement action by the county. Pastor Jack Triber issued a statement Monday after being fined. He said he obeyed the initial orders that the church and all of its ministries be shut down. The church runs a school, a college, a bus service, jail and prison ministry, rest home ministry, Sunday school, and many other outreach efforts. Triber appealed to the local health director and the governor, saying that they are out of bounds in issuing the no worship and no singing orders. He said, "You can't make laws against the church. You have the right. We have the right to worship, but more than the right to worship under the Constitution, we have a command from God. In the edict that came to us, we have tried to obey what has been written, the protocol. One of the things that was amazing that we were cited for was we're not permitted to sing. So Sunday morning, a fine of $5,000, and Sunday night, a fine of $5,000. They're ratcheting everything up. This is America. To think a person can say you can't sing in church, you cannot preach without a mask on, you cannot communicate with people, this is out of bounds. The fines are out of bounds. The pastor discussed how the area is not a hot spot for coronavirus and that meeting outside, as the county allows them to do with 60 people, won't work because of the bad air quality from the fires and the heat. People. I mean, yeah, Delta Airlines. Think of this. They allow people packed in like sardines on airplanes in California. So do you really think that this ban from the governor of California is really in the interest of public safety, or is it a deliberate and overt action against Christianity? Even if it's, in our view, wrong-sided Christianity. Absolutely, it is. Absolutely, it is. And again, while I may not agree with their doctrine, when it comes to the world doesn't see what difference there is between this church and that church. When the world hates church, they're going to hate all of them. And they're going to come against all of them. If I were to say, well, John MacArthur, he deserves it. Shut his church down. The anti-Bethel church, they've got to come and shut their church down. When they're done shutting their church down, they're going to come after ours. And people, it's a matter of time. As everything is, it is simply a matter of time. Does that scare you? Does it sober you? That's what I'm wanting. Whether you're afraid or not, that's whatever. But it should sober you into the realization that right now is not the time to back away from God. Right now is the time to take a stand for our faith. Last night at the Republican National Convention, Mark and Patricia McCloskey, do you remember them? Get off my lawn! Made a speech. My wife played that in the car this morning. Great speech. Wasn't the best. They're not the best public speakers in the world. Some pretty wealthy people. They're both attorneys. I think he's a personal injury lawyer, and apparently a good one. That house they got is really nice. I mean, it's a really nice house. But the Antifa, Black Lives Matter, Marxist crowd kicked down, tore down an iron gate that's breaking and entering, and surrounded that house. And the McCloskeys knew that, Dorn, retired St. Louis police officer Dorn, was shot and killed during one of these peaceful protests, shot in the back of the head. They knew it. And guess who was leading this peaceful protest in their front yard? The same gal that won Lacey Clay's congressional district seat in the Missouri primary a couple weeks ago. She is a Marxist, which means a communist. She is an avowed communist. And as liberal as Lacey Clay was, Lacey's a guy, by the way, as liberal as he was, he's not liberal enough. And so the woman who led the protest to the McCloskey's house is now going to be the next representative, the first district, St. Louis, Missouri, to Washington, D.C. Because there are no Republicans really that run against Democrats in St. Louis. It just doesn't happen. Mark and Patricia McCloskey, a St. Louis couple who garnered national media attention when they aimed guns at Black Lives Matter protesters in June outside their home, warned during their Monday night speech at the first night of the Republican National Convention that Americans would not be safe in a nation run by radical Democrats. The radicals are not content just marching in the streets, Mark McCloskey said. They want to walk the halls of Congress. They want power. This is Joe Biden's party. These are the people who will be in charge. The McCloskeys, both personal injury attorneys, were charged with one felony count of unlawful use of a weapon after they waved guns at demonstrators near their St. Louis home. Circuit Attorney Kim Gardner told the Associated Press that their actions risked creating a violent situation. Hold on. Just sometimes when stupid hits me that hard, I have to pause for a minute and just let I have to like get over the stupid that I just heard. Kim Gardner said that the McCloskeys initiated creating a violent situation. But the protesters didn't do anything. Now, if nobody shows up to the McCloskey's house, and then they walk out in their yard pointing guns at cars going up and down the street, that's different. But that's not what happened. In the eyes of the law, that's not what happened. What happened was the protesters created a violent situation. And the McCloskeys had every right in the world. They had every right under Missouri law. They had every right under federal law. And they had every right under God's law to defend their property and their lives. Every right to do what they did. But anyway, she said they created a violent situation during an otherwise nonviolent protest, a nonviolent protest where they ripped down an iron gate. Several Republican leaders, including President Trump, have urged Attorney General William Barr to pursue civil rights investigation against Gardner. Do you understand that George Soros has bought and paid for Kim Gardner? Absolutely. And I'm not making up conspiracy claims. This is true. She has received hundreds of thousands of dollars to not only get elected the first time, she's going to get elected again because nobody running against. You don't run against the Democrat in St. Louis. If you're a Republican, you just don't. Another Democrat ran against her in the primary and lost. Do you know why? Because George Soros backed Kim Gardner. So she's got hundreds of thousands of dollars to use for a campaign. Plus, I wouldn't put it past that crowd one bit to cheat on the voting. Wouldn't put it past them. Wouldn't put it past them. So the McCloskeys, they called the mob an out-of-control mob, none of whom were charged with a crime, and were merely defending their home on a private street in an upscale neighborhood. Now, Here's how that article ended. And see if you can hear any bias in this article whatsoever, okay? The McCloskeys went on to laud Trump during their speech, vowing that he would pledge Americans' right to defend themselves. They said, quote, "Trump brought us the greatest economy our country has ever seen," Mark McCloskey said. "The Democrats have bought us nothing but destruction." According to PolitiFact, however, despite Trump's claims of having inherited economic decay, most of the country's economic gains of the last 4 years are a continuation of those that began under the Obama administration. Do you detect any, well, there's a word for it, but I won't use it. Do you detect any bias in that story whatsoever? So all they did was said, you know, Trump's brought us a great economy. But the article said, well, the economy doing so well is a continuation of what Obama did back in his 8 years of destroying the country. That's, yeah. PolitiFact. I wonder what that is. What else? Oh, this one. Hang on. This is what I got to get to today. Let's see here. I got a call yesterday. Let me pull this article up, and I'll put it on the screen while I'm talking. I got a call yesterday from someone very, very frantic, very fearful. I will continue to say this, and I will continue to speak out against stuff like this. I wasn't aware of it, but apparently somebody online is now claiming that there's going to be a great famine in September. And it's like, it was presented to me like this was, you know, from the Lord. The Lord is saying there's going to be a great famine in September. big famine all over the world. Everybody's, you know, everybody's going to starve to death. And this is the word of the Lord. God has shown them that there's going to be a famine in September. And I encouraged the person on the phone. I said, look, I said, I don't know where you heard this from. I said, but there's a lot of fear-mongering on the internet. There's a lot of people who are making money freaking other people out with fear. And I said, now, call me in October, and then we'll talk about whether or not we actually had a famine in September. And if we don't have a famine in September, and believe me, I'm not wanting a famine in September, but when we don't have a famine in September, go back to whatever website you found that on or whatever YouTube video you saw that on. Send them an email or put a comment in there and saying, will you apologize for lying? And I said, I've been doing this Watchman broadcast now since 2009. I've seen these claims made by people who thrive on fear, panic. They make money off of it. And in some cases, I actually believe that they want that to happen so that they could say, I was right. And that's a horrible thing. That's a horrible thing to do. To actually hope, you know, this, there's a meteor coming and it's full of aliens and it's being guided by aliens and it's going to crash and it's going to start the tribulation and God's already, and they actually want this to happen. It's like naming the date of the rapture and the start of the, they actually want this to happen. They want these bad things that they predict to actually take place because God forbid that they should ever be wrong. And she said some other things to me. It's everything that I've been trying to tell people for years. Quit believing everything you read, see, hear, watch on the internet. Don't believe it. Read your Bible. Believe that. Okay? Believe that one. I'm trying to remember some of the other things that she said was going to happen. Oh, I remember what it was. That the, and I had brought this up from Mike Adams, the health ranger. And he's got about 20 different websites that he uses to promote all of this hysteria. And he's making a fortune off of this stuff. He's advertising all of his products on there. People are buying all this stuff up that he's got. I told the lady, I said, I guarantee you, whoever is trying to tell you that there's going to be a famine in September has got a link where you can buy dehydrated foods from them or through them somehow, some way. I guarantee you somebody's making money off of that. So anyway, the idea that this coronavirus vaccine that whoever's working on is going to be the mark of the beast, and they're going to slip it into everybody. People are going to go unwittingly, without knowing, well, I thought I was just getting a shot. No, you're getting the mark of the beast. It's not going to happen that way. It's not. It's almost like you can convincing God's people that they're going to get the mark of the beast, even though they have spent their whole lives asking God to save them, that because they didn't listen to some website, God's going to turn them over to a reprobate mind at the last second. And people, the God I serve doesn't do that. He doesn't treat his people that way. He's never treated me that way. And I've had it coming. And so have all of you. We deserve to be treated that way, but he doesn't treat his people that way. I guarantee you that if we're standing here alive on this earth, when they roll out whatever the mark of the beast is going to be, God's people are going to know it. And we're going to say, and I 100% guarantee you we won't know it because we read it on the website. We're going to know it from the Word of God alone. And that's it. Now, I'm not telling you should go get vaccines or not vaccines. I don't care. But this fear stuff, throwing fear at people that they're accidentally going to eat a genetically modified bean and wake up one day with the mark of the beast on the right hand. Stop believing that stuff. Democratic platform. We will guarantee transgender students access to facilities based on their gender identity. The platform approved by the Democratic National Convention last week says that the party will seek to guarantee transgender students access to facilities based on their gender identity. Allowing teenage boys or teachers the right to go into the girls' bathroom, allowing them, demanding that those girls must let a male student or teacher enter into their bathroom. Democrats applaud this year's U.S. Supreme Court decision that made clear that employment discrimination based on sexual orientation or disorientation and gender identity violates the law, but we know we still have work to do to ensure the LGBTQ plus. You know what the plus? There's something hiding behind that plus. You want to guess what it is? What's the word they use for it now? It's not child love. Minor affection or something like that. People are treated equally under the law and in our society. That's what the plus is hiding. We will fight to enact the Equality Act and at last outlaw discrimination against LGBTQ plus and housing, public accommodations, access to credit, education, jury service, federal programs. We will work to ensure the blankety 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 blank our people are not discriminated against when seeking to adopt or foster children. That's already been proven to be a way to traffic children to pedophiles. When the very first case in Australia of two sodomite men who wanted to start adopting children, they didn't adopt girls. They adopted boys. And when they adopted them, almost immediately started in on them. Almost immediately. The Democrats want a pipeline of children fed to their pedophile machine. Nonstop supply. Democrats will ensure federally funded programs for older adults are inclusive for LGBTQ plus seniors, it says. This is a screen capture of the passage of the Democratic platform for 2020. Now, all you good church members out there, we vote Democrat. Democrat for the working man. My daddy was a Democrat. My granddaddy was a Democrat. And I'm a Democrat. because they're for the working man. All you good church members out there, this is what you're going to vote on. The wording is, Democrats applaud this year's U.S. Supreme Court decision that made clear that employment discrimination based on, we already read all that. That's the screen check. That's their platform. So if you can go sit in your church, Methodist, Nazarene, Baptist, Catholic, Presbyterian, Pentecostal, doesn't matter. I don't care. You call yourself a Christian, and you're going to go vote for that, and you don't, and yet in your mind, you just kind of disqualify that because they're for the working man. No, I ain't buying it. I ain't buying it for a second. Now, let me put this guy up on the screen here. Wrong one. Why do they do that to me? There we go. Baphomet. Let's talk about what all of that represents. And by the way, when they made this image of Baphomet, who's standing there next to him? Children. What do they want? Children. They want children. Let me show you something in Genesis concerning a little known, not too many people have heard of this place called Sodom. Notice this in verse 4. When the angels came to deliver Lot and his family from Sodom, verse 4 says, but before they lay down, the men of the city, even the men of Sodom, compassed the house round both old and young. All the people from every quarter. 1, 2, 3, 4. That number 4 tells you that's a reference, I believe, Fourth Kingdom. But notice that the Sodomite agenda had taken so much control that they had the young ones there too. The boys. Okay? And then, let's see here. What did God say? What did Jesus say about the little ones? Matthew 18. He said, verily I say unto you, except you be converted and become as little children, you shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven. Now think about what he's saying here. What, you know, we know he's speaking in a sort of a symbolic language. Do we get the symbolism of it? Yeah, I think we do. The innocence of a child. Child just doesn't sit and think about perverted things all day long if they are left alone, if they've never been messed with. There is an innocence there. And the way they see the world, we love how children see the world. They're just very innocent. And he's saying that. We get that. Except you be converted and become as little children. You know, you can tell little children about Jesus and they will believe it. They'll believe it. It's just easy to talk to them about Jesus and Noah's Ark and giants and things like that. They believe all that stuff. It's just easy for them to believe. And whosoever shall humble himself as this little child, the same is greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And who shall receive one such little child in my name receiveth me. But whoso shall offend one of these little ones, which believe in me, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and that he were drowned in the depth of the sea. I think he meant it. You know what's always been interesting to me about that statement? He mentions that millstone. And I think, I think it's back here. Jeremiah 51. Come on, scroll back here. Toward the end of Jeremiah 51. Where is it? Yeah, the word of the Lord, which Jeremiah the prophet commanded Sariah the son of Neriah the son of Messiah, when he went in with Zedekiah the king of Judah into Babylon, the fourth year of his reign, and Sariah was a quiet prince. So Jeremiah wrote in a book all the evil that should come upon Babylon, even all those words that are written against Babylon. And Jeremiah said to Sariah, when thou comest to Babylon, and shalt see and shalt read all these words, thou shalt say, O Lord, thou hast spoken against this place to cut it off, that none shall remain in it, neither man nor beast, but that it shall be desolate forever. And it shall be, when thou hast made an end of reading this book, that thou shalt bind a stone to it and cast it in the midst of the Euphrates. And thou shalt say, thus shall Babylon sink, and shall not rise from the evil that I will bring upon her, and they shall be weary. These thus far are the words of Jeremiah. I always see like a correlation between what he said here and the millstone cast into the sea. Take the words and wrap them around a millstone and get them all together and then cast it into the Euphrates so that it sinks. And he said, that's how Babylon's going to sink. You want to know who Babylon is? Babylon is a lot of things. Babylon is a spirit, of course, represents a city. The city, if Jerusalem's the city of God, Babylon's the city of hell, city of Satan, city of the Antichrist. It's those who offend the little ones. Okay? That's what Babylon is. And it just sticks out to me that there's old Baphomet there, and he's got the admiration of those children looking up. And see, this is a direct mockery of all those paintings you may have seen of Jesus and the children, where Jesus said, suffer the little children to come unto me and forbid them not, for such is the kingdom of heaven. So here is another Jesus drawing the children to himself. And how does that happen, parents? How did that happen with you? How did you, as an adult, how did you get lured into so much evil in your life? Was it evil communications? Shows that you watch, movies that you watch, music that you listen to, people that you hung around with, books that you read? Think about this for a minute. 2 Corinthians 6:14, be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. Because Baphomet really is all about the opposites. Things that don't belong together. Okay? Things that should have never been mixed together. Okay? That's what Baphomet represents. Light and darkness. Okay? So here's Paul. Be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. That means don't join a church that doesn't believe. don't join an organization that doesn't believe what you believe in. We were taught, I had a great pastor growing up here, Pastor Goff, and I had several, don't get me wrong, but one just really stood out to me, and it was during my teenage years here. Lisa and I both, this is where we met, and we met under this pastor, Preacher Goff. And he always told us, if you're going to date somebody, never date somebody you wouldn't marry, number one. Number two, never date somebody who doesn't believe what you believe. And he taught that and preached that. Now, I love his family, but some of his own kids didn't listen to that advice. And they made lots of mistakes. But it wasn't because he didn't warn them. But you just don't yoke together with unbelievers. What fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness? What business do we have joining ourselves in league with people that are wicked people? What communion hath light with darkness? Is there any joining together of, well, the yin-yang symbol comes to mind. That's a communion of light and darkness, because that's what it means. What concord hath Christ with this guy, Belial? Can you see Jesus returning in the clouds, announcing to everybody that he's worked out a deal with Satan where everybody's gonna get to live and nobody's going to have to go to hell? Can you imagine if that Jesus, or when that Jesus shows up, then I'll know it's not the Jesus that we believe in. What part hath he that believeth with an infidel, someone who doesn't believe? Fidelity means belief, faithful. What agreement hath the temple of God, which ye are the temple of God, with idols? Do you remember what God showed to Ezekiel in Ezekiel 14? Remember what he showed to him there. Son of man, these men have set up their idols in their heart and put the stumbling block of their iniquity before their face. Should I be inquired at all by them? They've got idols in their heart. Is that supposed to be? No. You know, I have been talking about the book of Daniel. And I remember the last time we brought this up, that in Daniel 4, the vision that Nebuchadnezzar saw this time was Daniel told him that, you know, the tree and so on, that a beast heart was going to be given to it. Yeah, verse 16, let his heart be changed from man's, and let a beast heart be given unto him, and let seven times pass over him. Well, that's what that represents. A man with the heart of a beast. He's not a man. He's a, as Peter said, natural brute beasts made to be taken and destroyed. That's what happens when you have an agreement with the temple of God and with idols. When you believe that a statue, you can pray to a statue or a stick or a rock or a big black cube like in Mecca. That's an idol too, okay? When you believe that that statue the priest is praying to, that's really Jesus. Oh, we don't. That's sacrilege. You can't do anything to statues. Okay? That's an agreement with the temple of God, with idols. Ye are the temple of the living God. As God has said, I will dwell in them and walk in them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Now, here's what's interesting. If you stop and think about this for a minute, let's count this. Be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers, that's one. What fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness, that's two. What communion hath light with darkness, that's three. What concord hath Christ with Belial, that's four. What part hath he that believeth with an infidel, that's five. And what agreement hath the temple of God with idols, that's six. And notice that these are all opposites joined together, related to the number six. So let's do this. Let's go to Genesis 6. And what do we see here? The sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were fair, and they took them wives of all which they chose. Opposites. Sons of God in the heavenly realm, literally angels. We know that's true. We know that's true. We know that that doesn't have anything to do with the offspring of Seth. Nothing to do with it whatsoever. Because the Bible doesn't say that. And yet the Bible does say that those sons of God were of the angelic realm, says it in Psalm 82. Oh, it says it in verse 6. I have said, ye are gods, and all of you are children of the Most High. So there it says it. But notice back in Genesis 6, you have the joining together of opposites. And what happens? There were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, and they bare children to them, the same became mighty men which were of old, men of renown. Let me show you another example of that. How about this one, 1 Timothy? This might help you out with something else in the Bible here in a minute. 1 Timothy 3:16, notice this. Great and without controversy, great is the mystery of godliness. God was manifest in the flesh. Two different things. Justified in the Spirit, seen of angels, preached unto the Gentiles, believed on in the world, received up into glory. Pretty cool, isn't it? God manifest in the flesh. The Word became flesh and dwelt among them. And the Word was God. Remember that? Okay. So what we see back there in Genesis 6, it's just a mockery of Jesus Christ. Remember, Baphomet himself is a mockery of Jesus Christ, meant to be a mockery of Jesus Christ. Here's the devil's way of mixing gods and men together. God's way of doing it is sending his only begotten Son, Jesus Christ, in the form of flesh. But he was fully God, but he was fully man. Somebody had asked me the question this morning, how was it that Jesus was astonished? I can't remember the scenario, but Jesus was astonished about something, like, And because they were asking, like, wasn't he God? You know, didn't he know this? I said, yeah, but for the same reason that Jesus wept at Lazarus' death, knowing that in 5 seconds he was going to be alive again, same reason why, I can't remember what all I said, but I gave different things that showed Jesus' humanity. The fact that he was hungry, and yet he really could have made the stones into bread, couldn't he have? I mean, there's no sin. There's no commandment in the Bible at all about turning stones into bread. I mean, he could do it. Okay? He was hungry, and yet he was the creator of all food. He was thirsty, yet he was the living water. Okay? He was astonished, and yet he knows everything. He wept over Lazarus' death, and yet he knew he was going to raise him from the dead. See, that's the Savior that I like. Not this character here. I don't like him. Anyway, back to this. God says, verse 17, wherefore come out from among them and be ye separate. There's another 17 there. I like that. I like that number 17. Because that's the number for the rapture, the translation. Come out from among them and be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you. Don't touch that. Stay away from that. Get away. And I will be a father unto you, and ye shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty. When this thing was released, I think, what year was this? 2015, maybe? Christians protest after the Satanic Temple unveils bronze Baphomet statue featuring a human body, goat's head, and wings. 2015. The invitation said, dress like an animal or wear horns and tails. So that's... Does that thing about having a beast heart now, does that kind of make sense now with Nebuchadnezzar? A beast heart was given to him. And that's what these people, that's what they have, and that's what they want. They want to be like, you know, I'm told that in the First Nations or the Native American tribes, that when they first go into the sweat lodge, that they spend time in there and they finally go into a trance and they meet their familiar, their beast spirit. So they come out, now they're given a name. He's Talking Eagle, or he's Running Fox, or whatever. And the name is based upon the beast that they met in the sweat lodge. It's the same as those who practice Wicca. They're taught to be on the lookout for an animal that you keep seeing, you know, coming to you, or an animal you keep seeing in your dreams, or one in the neighborhood, or, you know, a bird that always ends up flying at your window or whatever, because that's your familiar. They actually call it that, a familiar. This is your familiar. It, basically, you and this spirit now are going to work together. You're going to be in agreement with this beast. That's what Wicca is. Exodus 20, thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them. For I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation. Think about genes, when you see the word generation, genetics. of them that hate me and showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments. So my big question is, what's the difference between a satanic group that makes a statue of a beast man and has a big party around it, and a Catholic or Lutheran church that has a big statue on it and everybody bows and prays to it? What's the difference? According to God, there isn't one. There is no difference whatsoever. Now, I wanted to focus today on Baphomet's hands. Okay? Now, I mentioned earlier that, why is all of this stuff going on in California with the churches? Now, again, when the virus thing really hit, we understood we had a pandemic going on. Our governor asked us to sit out 2 weeks. That's what we did. After 2 weeks, however, I start making phone calls and say, look, we're having church. If you want to come to church, come to church. And people started coming back. And we're going to keep doing that. But still, out in California and probably other places, they're fighting a battle over having church service. What's the purpose of that? Does it really have anything to do with public health and public safety? No. It has everything to do with what's written on Baphomet's, on his sleeves, his tattoos, which you ought not get. Can I get amen out of somebody? Salve. That's not Salve and Caligula. Okay, that's Salve and Coagula. Salve means dissolve, shred, tear down. Guy wants to develop some property, and he's got these two old rundown buildings on that property, and he wants to get rid of them and build this new, brand new building on it. Well, what's in his way? The two buildings that were on there before. Got to get rid of those. So he arranges to have those two buildings torn down. Think of September 11th, 2001. Now, I'm not suggesting that the developers down at Lower Manhattan, who owned the property of One World Trade and, you know, building Tower 1 and Tower 2. I'm not suggesting that he wanted to tear those down and build a new, but they were symbolic. The two towers there represented the old order, the old way. So let's tear those down, because it's two separate buildings. They're divided. Let's tear those down and let's put one building in its place. And if you've ever seen, let me see here. That's wrong one. Let's see if I can get this one up. Yeah, here we go. What do they call it? Freedom Tower? That's what they called it. Where's my pictures? Here we go. Oh, I can't just put that on the screen, can I? Let me do it like that. There we go. I want you to notice that that building, the way it's designed, is opposites. Why did they design it that way? You had a triangle pointing up and a triangle pointing down. And that's how they built that. It's how they designed it. Why did they do it that way? Because that's showing you the nature of the symbolism of it. It's the new world. It's representative of it. It's 1,776 feet tall. Is that because that's the year our country was born? No. May 1st, 1776. May 1st is the 121st day of the year, if I remember right. What is that? That's 11 times 11. 11's the number for Babylon, Babel. But the whole purpose and the design of that, there's even a tarot card called the Tower. Have you seen that? Let me see if I can pull that one up. The Tower card of the tarot. Tower, tarot. Look at that. It shows all these, this building on fire and people falling out of it. You know, Do you know what the meaning of that is? The meaning of the card. It might tell you here. Upright tarot meanings. Chaos, destruction, sudden upheaval, trauma, unexpected change. Disaster, loss, tragedy, revelations, confusion, pain. The Tower card represents the tearing down of the old order in order to replace it with the new order. That's what it means. You can't put the new world where the old world is. You can't do it. Even God says that in the Bible. He taketh away the first that he may establish the second. So what is their plan here? What's their game? What's their gimmick? Why is Antifa still trying to destroy all these cities? Are they still protesting George Floyd? Is that what they're still doing? No. It never was about that. It was about releasing riot and chaos in our streets to tear down the nation, destroy the Republican form of government. And listen, I'm telling you, America is the last place. This is it right here. This is the only nation like it in the whole world where we can have our liberties, we can keep our guns to protect those liberties. By the way, I mentioned Sunday that my pastor, Reg Kelly, he's got some ammo for sale. And I took orders from people in the church. I'm going to end up ordering like, 7,000 rounds of ammunition just from our little church. Okay? We can still do that in this country. We can still buy ammunition and buy guns and defend our liberties. We can still do that. Okay? But you start letting the right people back in charge of our country again, we're gone. You say, well, over my dead body, there'll be a war. I think that's what they want. I really do. I really think that's what they want. I think they want a war that will dissolve the Union. so they can put a new one in its place. A new world order. But then, look at his fingers. It's Baphomet's fingers. Look at those fingers for a minute. Notice one pointing up, one pointing down. Okay, just like the Freedom Tower that we saw. Notice these two fingers going down like that, and these three fingers going up like this. Now, I've been looking for a place to show you all of this. I've showed some of it. Let's see here. Let's see if I can get these pulled up. I started seeing that hand gesture in different places. And it's almost like it's deliberate. This is from a 5-hour energy commercial. Okay? Just notice his hand. Let me do this for a second. Okay? Do you see it? Do this. Let's see if I can find another one here. You see it? Jules? I didn't know that Germans, when they count three, they always do it like this. Adolf Eichmann. He was the guy that escaped. He was the Jew killer from Germany. They found him in Argentina. They smuggled him back to Israel. They had his trial. Asked him to swear an oath. They handed him a Bible, and he said, "I don't hold to any creed." He raised his hand to swear an oath. That's what he did. I can see the sort of the devil satanic thing in Adolf Eichmann. I sure can. This is from the movie Cowboys and Aliens. This is from the movie Amadeus, the magic flute scene. Okay? And again, it just looks deliberate. This is from the movie Assassin's Creed. That is from the movie Assassin's Creed. What do you see there? You see a Christ figure, don't you? That's deliberate. This is... let's see if we can... Look at there. That's Obi-Wan Kenobi, Attack of the Clones. Okay. Oh, this is from the movie Australia. The little boy in there. This is his mother telling him that he's got magic. He's got magic. Okay. Again, it's just deliberate. Look at, this is from the Avengers, and Peter Parker, if you watch this scene, he's doing this with both his hands, and he's not acting like Doctor Strange. This is, he's deliberately making his hand. Let's see here. Bert. What is this from? This is another scene from Cowboys. The Da Vinci Code. Tom Hanks. This is from Strange. They make that symbol. They do that with their finger. Every time magic, that's what they do. Eichmann again. This is from Germany, 1932. There we go. Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, it just looks deliberate. The movie Hail Caesar. which Hail Caesar is a movie about movies. It's a movie about how they made movies back in the 50s. And the plot of the movie is there is an actor that gets he gets kidnapped by these script writers, and these writers, they're all communists, and they're actually revealing in the movie how the script writers in a sub-session, and he's actually saying that in this scene, in a sub rosa faction, which means in a subtle way, putting in communist content into movies. Now, do you believe that one? Yeah, I believe that one. What movie is this one from? I don't remember. Star Trek, The Undiscovered Country. Again, that's Avengers Infinity War. Where else? Come on. John Wick. The movie John Wick. Here's another scene from John Wick. Same one. Johnny English. That one's deliberate. The Keymaker scene from The Loaded. He dies and his hand just happens to fall that way. This is from... oh, this is Lando Droid. What movie was it? It was, they put Solo. Called it Han Solo or something. Solo. There. The remake of Mulan. This is, this is the movie Paul. This is from the closing credits. That guy there. How many more do I have? I know I've got more. Hang on a second. There was a movie that had like these... Yeah, here we go. The Minority Report. Here they are, here, here, here. Anyway, you get the idea. Let's talk about those hands for a minute. Let's go to Genesis 23. Because if there's several ways to look at this. It is... As above, so below. We've talked about that before. His hands in general are making as above, so below. But you have two fingers pointing down, three pointing up. So you could say, okay, this is what? A two and a three. That's five. There's five fingers. We know what the number five means. It is a number for death. So let me show you that very quickly. Genesis chapter 5, I've gone through this before several times, but all the days that Adam lived were 930 years and he died. You have Adam mentioned here in verse 1, here in verse 2, here in verse 3, here in verse 4, and in verse 5. I talked about this the other day, the fact that the number 5 represents death. So why does... In the translation verses, 1 Thessalonians 4:16 and 17, 1 Corinthians 15:51 and 52, why do they deal with the number 5? It's because it's victory over death. Why does Elijah, why are there 50 men of the sons of the prophets who see Elijah, who tell Elisha, Elijah is going to be taken from your head today? Yeah, I know it. So the number 5 is there. It's related to that. But the number 23, what does that deal with? Let's go to Genesis 23. Sarah was 107 and 20 years old. These were the years of the life of Sarah. And Sarah died in Kirjath Arba, the same as Hebron in the land of Canaan. And Abraham came to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her. If you remember, I think Kirjath Arba, Arba was the name of a giant, if I remember right, in the Bible. But anyway, the number 23 is a number for death. What is in Psalm 23? What does it say? Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. What does Romans 3:23 say? For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. So, what are the wages of those sins? The wages of sin is death. That's in verse 23. If we go to Romans chapter 1, and we look at a list of sins that are mentioned here. Verse 28, even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient, being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable, unmerciful. 23 things here. And then it says, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death. Not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. If we were to take the word crucify, I think we're going to find it more than 23 times. But if I remember right, the 23rd occurrence, could be wrong, Luke 23:23. And they were instant with loud voices, requiring that he might be crucified. Let me count if I see if I remember that right. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. 21, 22. I'm one off. But here in Luke 23:33, where they crucified him and the other malefactors, one on the right hand, one on the left. Maybe you might want to double check me. Maybe I made a mistake in reading these. It seemed like this was like the 23rd occurrence of either the word, of all the forms of the word crucify or crucified. But anyway, you get the idea. The number 23 being the number for death. And if you look down here at his hands here again, he's making the same number, 2 and then 3 here, only it's like upside down. Still the number 23. So 23 and 23 would be double death. Is there a double death? Well, let's look in Matthew, the 23rd chapter. Let's see if there is a double death. Let's see here. Where is it? Oh, there's the word crucify in Matthew 23. Let's see here. Where is it I'm looking for? It's where they make someone a proselyte. Where is it? Well, let's start here. This would be a good place to start. Thou blind Pharisee, cleanse thou first that which is within the cup and platter, that the outside of them may be clean also. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye are like whited sepulchres. And by the way, that when in Genesis 23, not only does it mention Sarah's death, but they deal in the chapter with the purchase of the cave of Machpelah, because that's where Sarah is going to be buried. Not only Sarah, but also Abraham, also Isaac, also Jacob. Okay, if you remember Jacob, when he's in Egypt, he tells his sons, okay, now, however long you're here, that's fine, but whenever you leave, you take my bones with you, because I want to be buried in the cave of Machpelah with his forefathers, with Isaac and Abraham. Now, I don't know right now the significance of why Jacob had to be buried there. To me, I told my wife, you can do whatever you want to with me. If I die, whatever you want, okay? Put me in a grave, throw me in the ocean, doesn't really matter to me, okay? But for some reason, Jacob wanted his bones taken to be buried in the cave of Machpelah, which is what you see in Genesis 23. So in Matthew 23, 23rd chapter of the New Testament, woe unto you, scribes, Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye like unto whited sepulchres, which indeed appear beautiful outward, but are within full of dead men's bones and of all uncleanness. Even so ye outwardly appear righteous unto men, but within are full of hypocrisy and iniquity. He says here in verse 33, you generation, you serpents, you generation of vipers, how can you escape the damnation of hell? So if we were to look at the word hell, it's obviously more than 23 times in the Bible. But in, where is it? Verse 15, that's what I was looking for. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you compass sea and land to make one proselyte. And when he is made, you make him twofold more the child of hell than yourselves. Twofold. Is there a double death? Yes. The Bible says, he that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches. He that overcometh shall now be hurt of the second death. Revelation 20, verse 6, blessed and holy is he that hath part in the first resurrection. On such the second death hath no power. Revelation 20, verse 14, and death and hell were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death. Revelation 21, 8, the fearful and unbelieving, the abominable and murderers and whoremongers and sorcerers and idolaters and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burneth with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. Peter mentioned, or Jude actually. Jude and Peter are parallel passages concerning the false prophets. These are spots in your feast of charity when they feast with you, feeding themselves without fear. Clouds they are without water, carried about of winds, trees whose fruit withereth without fruit, twice dead, plucked up by the roots. And what's interesting to me about that is that they are still walking on this earth, breathing, eating, talking, thinking. But God has already written them off. If somebody is twice dead, is there even the remotest possibility that they can be converted, be forgiven of their sins, and saved? The answer is no. Once they are twice dead, though they may still be alive on this earth, God has already written them off completely. And there is no chance whatsoever that they will ever be converted. That's what that's about. Not just once dead, but twice dead. Now, there's more to this. I want to spend some time with it. But I will, of course, run out of time today. So today, I'm going to bid you adieu. Pardon my French. You have a wonderful day. It's good to be with you today. Thank you for your prayers, your love. You're the reason why we do what we do. You're the reason why some people are in heaven. Because God is using you. Your prayers, your support, your willingness to share this ministry with other people. It's working. It's having an effect on people's lives. And if it's done for God's glory and God's praise and God's honor, that's what I want. I was a big Cardinals fan for a long time, and I'm just getting less and less interested in sports. Football, basketball, baseball. I'm just not the sports fan that I used to be. But back when I was a big sports fan, I would tell everybody, man, you gotta be a Cardinals fan. You gotta be a Cardinals fan. Man, I like Mark McGwire. I like... Love you.